streaming.afa.net has now become AFA Stream, and you can find it at stream.afa.net. You see, we removed the letters ING. Our experts have determined that eliminating those three keystrokes, multiplied over hundreds of thousands of AFA Stream visits, could reduce the national debt and maybe increase the gross domestic product. AFA Stream, formerly streaming.afa.net. Improvements to the economy are purely theoretical.
Welcome to Today's Issues. Join us for the next hour as we offer a Christian response to the issues of the day. Here's your host, Ed Vitagliano.
And welcome, everybody, to Today's Issues. Ed Vitagliano sitting in for Tim Wildman this week. I am joined in studio by Fred Jackson. Good morning, Fred.
Hello, Ed.
And remotely, Dr. Alex McFarland. Good morning, Alex.
Good morning, gentlemen.
And then for the second time in 3 days, we have gone to the bottom of the barrel.
That's right.
And brought in Tony Vitagliano, one of our vice presidents, and my son. Good morning to you.
Good morning. Good to be here.
And we have a bunch of folks out. I'm just teasing Tony. I told him in advance I was going to be saying that. It's kind of like hazing.
It's all right.
It's like hazing. You know, you're new to the outfit, and we're gonna punish you a little bit, and you know, make you pick up dry cleaning, get coffee. In my case, get a Diet Coke.
What's the reason for it when I'm not on the show?
What's that called? Yes,
touche.
Yes, touche. He's got his mother's quick wit when it comes to humiliating me in public, but that's okay. So anyway, welcome. Glad to have you on board some this week, Fred. We've talked before. I've talked with Tim Wildman and I, we've said it on air, can't wait for the election to be over because of the crush of information that we have to deal with. But even apart from the election, there is stuff going on in the Middle East. This is just mind-boggling, and it's constantly changing, new stuff happening. What is the latest going on?
24 hours ago, when we opened our program yesterday, we had breaking news of pagers exploding, pagers being used by Hezbollah terrorists in Lebanon. And we now know at least 12 people were killed by these exploding pagers and literally thousands of others injured. And the backstory very quickly was that Hezbollah terrorists had told its people to stop using cell phones because they were worried Israel could then track where these Hezbollah terrorists were. Hezbollah, you know, Lebanon, just on the northern border of Israel.
Right.
And, you know, the terrorists have been throwing missiles into Israel ever since the day after the October 7th Hamas attack against Israel in southern Israel. So yesterday, the story was the exploding pagers. Now, there's been, you know, some stories in the last 24 hours. How did this happen? The belief is that Israel had managed to find a way that when a certain signal was sent to these pagers, the lithium batteries that run these things heated up and exploded. That's what we know so far. Now, we're just learning in the last 5-10 minutes, there have been further explosions this morning, possibly of walkie-talkies that these Hezbollah terrorists may be using. And there's one report saying at least 3 or 4 walkie-talkies exploding. So that is the latest. Funerals are being held today for some of those people who were killed yesterday. Of course, the usual condemnation of Israel. But Israel is at war with two terrorist groups.
Right.
Hamas terrorists who run Gaza and the Hezbollah terrorist group, all backed by Iran, so this isn't just Israel being nasty. This is Israel trying to protect itself, because what happened the day after the Hamas massacre in southern Israel, Hezbollah began to fire on northern Israel, forcing people who live in northern Israel to move out of there, and they haven't been able to go back.
That's right.
And it's almost a year since that October 7th massacre. So earlier this week, Prime Minister Netanyahu had said, "We are ready to open up a full-fledged attack against Hezbollah because we want to secure northern Israel so our people can move back there." So this is believed to be a new technique on this, and you can only imagine the intimidation factor that this would provide against these Hezbollah terrorists, that Israel can find you and do things to you to protect themselves.
You know, Alex, you know, first it was the pagers. Well, first it was the cell phones where Hezbollah, you know, was concerned that Israel would be able to track them and, I guess, take them out. So they went to the pagers. Those started exploding. Last I heard, Fred, there were more than 3,000 injured. That number probably is going to continue to climb. Now walkie-talkies, and when I heard that this morning, I was thinking, what else can go off? If you're Hezbollah, and by the way, I'm sure these pagers, there are thousands of Hezbollah soldiers. These individuals who got the pagers have to be in the upper echelon of Hezbollah leadership. Yeah. But if you're a part of that terrorist organization, you're wondering if your oatmeal's going to go off because Israel has found yet another way to target those who are trying to destroy their country.
Yeah, I mean, if I were over there, I would be going back to carrier pigeons or maybe a tin can on a string, you know. But I said yesterday that, you know, Haman was executed on the gallows he built for Mordecai and the Jews. And, you know, the Bible says in Genesis chapter 12, God promised Abraham, "I will bless them that bless thee and curse them that curse thee." You know, Mark Twain, who was not, as far as we know, he never became a Christian believer, but Mark Twain said, if there's anything that makes me believe in God and the supernatural, it's the Jewish people. And God is going to protect Israel, ultimately. And that's why I've said many times the best favor an American president could ever do this nation is to be a friend to Israel. People square off against the nation of Israel at their own peril.
Tony, you know, there has been talk, and the expectation is that Israel is at some point going into Lebanon because of what, Fred, you were talking about. For over a year, Hezbollah has been attacking the country, the northern part of Israel, trying to kill its citizens. So I have to wonder, because none of us know, I mean, even probably foreign policy experts don't know exactly what Israel intends to do or what Hezbollah is thinking, but I have to believe that they are unnerved at this point. And if Israel does decide to invade the southern part of Lebanon to go after Hezbollah, I wonder what the psychological impact of this initial response, the pagers and now the walkie-talkies, is going to have on Hezbollah.
Yeah, absolutely. We can kind of look at it for a parallel, because there is a lot of speculation as to whether the war plans have been approved. You know, there's some outlets have reported the war plans have been approved for an invasion of Lebanon, and the purpose of invading southern Lebanon would be, according to Israel, their goal would be to secure the northern part of Israel so that those who have had to flee because of the constant attacks from Hezbollah could go back to where they live. So the goal would be to invade southern Lebanon, push back Hezbollah, and kind of create a buffer. But for this pager attack is an analogy I can think of is it would be like the Allies causing all of the Nazis' radios to explode a couple of days before the invasion of Normandy.
Right.
Mm-hmm. I mean, you know, it's a tactic that's going to cause a lot of disruption, especially like you said, where you can assume these pagers were given to officers, leaders within the ranks, other, you know, probably Iranian parallel units who were aiding them. So this was targeted towards disrupting the command structure, is what it looks like to me, disrupting the command structure of Hezbollah with the imminent probable invasion of southern Lebanon. So
and communication, because if you can't use cell phones and you can't use pagers, and apparently you can't use walkie talkies, you're going to use homing pigeons. You know, how do you communicate in the midst of a war if that comes between Israel and Hezbollah?
Like I said, the intimidation factor itself at this point. Now, Hezbollah has already obviously said that they are going to respond, and that's the usual kind of response we get in these cases. But they have to be worried right now. I'm just seeing a CNN report where there have been, I was saying a few moments ago, 30 to 40 explosions now in the last few hours, with at least 3 people killed with these now exploding walkie-talkies. But it just goes to the brilliance of the Israeli military.
Yes.
And how they're able to carry out, you know, whether it was the raid on Entebbe.
Right.
You know, that goes back many years, I know. But the reports that we've heard of the attacks against Israel since Israel reformed as a nation in 1948 and things that happened when Israel was vastly outnumbered.
Right.
And yet they defeated the enemies. You know, 5 Arab nations coming against Israel,
right,
when Israel basically had no way to protect itself.
In 1948, they had no army.
Nothing.
Didn't even have a lot of weapons.
Yes. I think they had some Czechoslovakian old airplanes.
Right.
That's about all they had. But this just goes, God's protective hand is upon that nation. And he has given them a military capability that I don't think any nation surpasses.
Yeah.
I think it shows that their rules of engagement also are vastly different from the rest of the world. Yes. They realize the enemy that they're up against, and it's a shame that we have this flip-flopping on support for Israel from the current administration, because it's obvious that the current administration doesn't view the enemies that Israel is dealing with in the same light that they should. Right, they should, and that's why we should continue to support them, rather than threatening them with withholding munitions. You know, for how they're handling the situation in Gaza.
Right. All right. What's any additional information on that, or you want to move on, or what?
We can move on.
Okay. What else
because
we got?
Believe we have a political campaign going on in this country.
Yes.
And in the wake of the second assassination attempt on former President Trump on Sunday, a lot of questions have been pointed at the threatening language being used by Democrats, up to and including Kamala Harris and President Joe Biden. And many people on the conservative side saying, look, you keep saying that Donald Trump is a threat to the country. Don't you think that certain people who may listen to that are hearing that he really is a threat to the future of this country and that he must be eliminated? I mean, Hillary Clinton was going at it again in the last 48 hours, you know, that Donald Trump has to be removed from power, et cetera, et cetera. Well, yesterday, the one brave reporter that we often see at the White House briefing, that being Peter Ducey, decided to challenge Karine Jean-Pierre, the official spokesperson for the White House, on this issue of language and using the term of Donald Trump being a threat to the nation. And the exchange got rather heated. I'm going to play that for you. Cut number one.
How many more assassination attempts on Donald Trump until the president and the vice president and you pick a different word to describe Trump other than threat?
Peter, if anything from this administration, I actually completely disagree with the premise of your question, the question that you're asking. It is also incredibly dangerous in the way that you're asking it, because American people are watching.
That's I got to tell you, there are people who have nerve, and then there are people who have nerve.
Uh-huh.
And Alex, I got to tell you, that was a nervy thing to say. It's a legitimate question what Peter Ducey was asking, especially since people on the left, including the Biden administration, Kamala Harris and Karine Jean-Pierre, have blamed Trump, of all people, and made him the cause of the assassination attempts toward him. And then they turn around, she turns around and says, just asking the question is dangerous.
Yeah. Well, I mean, this is a classic example of blame the victim. And let me just say, if you read like Saul Alinsky's Rules for Radicals, which Obama loved that, you know, I mean, the degree to which Marxist overthrow of a culture has become the Democrat playbook, you know, I mean, that's something worth talking about over the last, you know, 10 to 15 years. But here's the thing, blame the victim. You know, this honest question, hey, you guys continually demonize and just denigrate Donald Trump. Is this not maybe motivating some unhinged people to engage in violence against the former president? And she says, you know, you're a part of the threat for even asking that question. I mean, silence your opponents. Now here's the thing. I mentioned this yesterday, guys. This just very lofty term, existential threat.
Right.
You know. So in April of this year, ScienceNews.com listed like a list of the things that could end the human race. Nuclear war, the right pandemic, lack of water.
An asteroid hitting.
An asteroid, you know. There are a dozen things that could potentially end human life. All right, Stanford University defined what existential threat means because it's attributed to Donald Trump on a daily basis by the left. Stanford University just recently said, well, an existential threat is something that could end human civilization. Just think, Trump is more dangerous than a pandemic, an alien invasion, an asteroid, you know, a global drought, you know. Just if he's elected, according to the left, we're talking about the loss of human civilization. I mean, this is ludicrous. This is ludicrous. Hopefully the American people are rational enough and mature enough to not buy any of their narrative.
I will say that according to a CBS reporter, I haven't had a chance to do a deep dive on this particular story. This says, CBS reporter finds only three Harris supporters in three Nevada restaurants. People are really excited about Trump. And so I'm not making anything out of that in terms of predicting, but there does seem to be a lot of people who support Trump, and maybe part of that support comes from the overheated language of the left. Tony, there are several things that are ironic here about what Karine Jean-Pierre did to Peter Ducey, but the left has been known for decades for blaming language for violence, okay?
Yes.
Every time a homosexual gets, you know, beat up in an alleyway or a kid commit suicide. By the way, that's a tragedy. We certainly think it's terrible if people are being beat up for any reason. But the first reaction of the left has been, you're saying it's a sin. Your language is driving people to do X, Y, or Z. Now, I've always thought if somebody beats someone up, okay, that's on them. That's They're responsible for their actions. Don't come blaming a speech that someone made or a sermon that some pastor preached and blame them for what some psycho did. But now when you come to a situation like this where you're asking Karine Jean-Pierre, hey, you're the ones always blaming language and saying verbal violence and it results right. in crime being committed, should you guys maybe think about ratcheting down your rhetoric? Karine yeah. Jean-Pierre doesn't even seem to get the connection between what they're always preaching and what she was just asked.
I think what we're witnessing getting closer to this election is the full manifestation of just how broken the brains of the left are by Donald Trump. The ability to reason, the ability for introspection and self-reflection is gone, because all we hear over and over again is that we must stop Donald Trump. Donald Trump is the existential threat to our democracy, even as they continue to advocate for policies and laws that would openly and actually repress our democracy. I think about Hillary Clinton talking about we should jail people who propagate Russian disinformation. Well, who's going to determine Russian disinformation? Well, it's going to be people on the left.
Yeah.
Saul Alinsky has a famous quote, accuse your opponent of what you are doing.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah. This is what they always turn to. And that I was reading through that exchange between Peter Doocy and KJP. Where does she go back to? January 6th, of course.
Yeah.
This is the example, the only thing they can keep pointing to over and over again of how Donald Trump is an existential threat to democracy. All the while,
they are the existential threat to our constitutional republic.
Right.
Exactly.
Listen, I have no problem saying, not everyone who's liberal, I'm saying this radical left that has taken over the Democratic Party, I can say without reservation, they hate the Constitution.
Yeah.
Okay. And the reason I say that is because the Constitution separates powers. It decentralizes political power. The left wants to aggregate it and centralize it. That's their whole goal, is to control the country from Washington, D.C. Kamala Harris wants to have price controls. They want to tell public schools all across the country who they can let into bathrooms and changing areas.
Mm-hmm.
This is the quote unquote progressive but increasingly Marxist mindset, which is a state that is all powerful and will even tell states what to do. And
oh yeah,
and that is the antithesis of the Constitution.
And Ed, forgive me for jumping in here, but I don't know if you guys remember, but back when Hillary was running against Donald Trump in 2016. She spoke of federalizing law enforcement.
Yes.
You know, I mean, this goes so far beyond the enumerated powers of the Constitution, which, you know, like we said yesterday, the Constitution is really a fairly short read.
Right.
And the enumerated powers are very limited. One of the hallmarks of conservatism has been limited government. But this idea, you know, Tim Walz said that misinformation is not protected free speech.
Right.
And Hillary, and she's not the only lefty, talking about federalizing law enforcement. Ed, you nailed it. I mean, they want to run our lives from Washington, D.C., and we be a police state.
Yes. I have, again, the legitimate old school liberals like RFK Jr. and others, I would say Joe Manchin, I would say Tulsi Gabbard, these people that are
Joe Lieberman
that are departing, Alan Dershowitz, mm-hmm. Bill Maher, although he's still a Democrat, he has been critical of this kind of new wave of radical leftists. All these people, they had a legitimate place in public political discourse because they supported the Constitution. They understood. We were all in agreement with this document. I am increasingly convinced that this radical left wants to overthrow it. They may not say it in so many words, but their actions are proof enough for me. We'll be back in a minute, folks. If ending babies' lives in their mothers' wombs isn't heartbreaking enough, the Biden-Harris administration punishes those who protect life, including up to 10 years in jail. And in a shocking stance, the Dems' VP nominee, Walz, supports infanticide, meaning the death of newborns. When will this madness end? Preborn's network of clinics is positioned in the highest abortion areas in the country, on standby to protect and love mothers facing unplanned pregnancies. By introducing a woman to her baby through ultrasound and showering her with God's love, her baby's chance at life doubles. But they can't do it without our help. If you're pro-life, please consider a donation of any size to support the mission of Preborn. All gifts are tax-deductible and will help to defend the defenseless. One ultrasound is just $28, or five ultrasounds are $140. $5,000 will sponsor ultrasounds for Preborn's entire network for a day. To donate securely, dial #250 and say the keyword baby. That's #250, baby. Or go to preborn.com. That's preborn.com/AFR. That's preborn.com/AFR.
This is Today's Issues. Email your comments to comments@AFR.net. Past broadcasts of Today's Issues are available for listening and viewing in the archive at AFR.net. Now, back to more of Today's Issues.
And welcome back. Ed Vitagliano sitting in for Tim Wildman today. I'm joined in studio by Fred Jackson. Dr. Alex McFarlane also joins us, and in studio, Tony Vitagliano, one of our vice presidents. And now the always effervescent Jenna Ellis, host of Jenna Ellis in the Morning, heard weekdays at 7 a.m. Central Time here on AFR. Jenna, good morning to you.
Good morning, and I'm going to add that now to my resume. I'm an expert in effervescence.
Yes,
apparently.
Listen, yes. Nothing better than being effervescent. I'm not quite sure I know what that means. I probably should have figured that out before I said
it's
that.
Okay. But Kamala Harris doesn't either, so we're fine.
Oh, so you just went there. You just compared me to Kamala Harris. That ruined my day.
I'm sorry. That was worse than the boomer jokes that I tell Tim. So.
Oh yeah, that's yeah. Yeah. Okay, boomer boy. I can't hear that enough. All right. Well, Jenna, we have been discussing, and we want to get your take on this, some of the fallout from two assassination attempts on President Trump, which I can't believe we're talking about two assassination attempts. But some of the fallout has been a discussion about who's to blame for that. The left, of course, continues to blame Trump for the assassination attempts. Some on the right, and I hope, you know, even-handed people in the middle are, you know, questioning if maybe Democratic Party rhetoric hasn't led to that. Fred, why don't you kind of set up and play for Jenna in case she was not listening before the break what we were discussing in terms of Peter Ducey and Karine Jean-Pierre.
Yeah, Jenna, was the White House briefing yesterday, and once again, Peter Ducey rises to the occasion. Peter Ducey was talking about the use of the word threat, referring to Donald Trump being a threat to the democracy of the country, et cetera, et cetera. So Peter Ducey says, you know, Kamala Harris, President Joe Biden, and he says, even you, Karine Jean-Pierre, use the word threat. So here's that exchange, Peter Ducey's question, and KJP's response.
How many more assassination attempts on Donald Trump until the president and the vice president and you pick a different word to describe Trump other than threat?
Peter, if anything from this administration, I actually completely disagree with the premise of your question, the question that you're asking. It is also incredibly dangerous in the way that you're asking it because American people are watching.
Mm. All right, Jenna. So who's right, KJP or Peter Ducey?
Well, clearly, Peter Ducey asked a great question. And if anyone knows how to be more vague than Kamala Harris, it's Karine Jean-Pierre. She never actually responds to a question. But it's a legitimate question because generally threats should be neutralized. I mean, when I have a threat of a spider in my apartment, I kill it, right? Yeah. I mean, that's just a normal thing. And so the whole both sidesing the rhetoric here of saying, well, both sides need to tone it down. And I've seen over the mainstream media saying, well, it's Trump's rhetoric that's getting himself in trouble. I mean, they're almost trying to blame him for the assassination attempts, which is utterly ridiculous. But the left is trying to equivocate Trump's rhetoric calling Kamala Harris a communist to hers calling him a threat to democracy. And the difference here is that he can actually back up the claim that she's a communist. Her policies reflect that, but she can't back up the claim that the left is literally calling him Hitler. And so I think for us as conservatives, we need to say, of course, we need to be careful that it's not just this entertainment-based sort of inflammatory rhetoric. We're not just out here to name call or pejoratives. But when we call Kamala Harris a communist, we actually substantively mean something by that. And so does Donald Trump. But for Kamala Harris and the left to continue to call him a threat, I think is very dangerous. And I think this is a really scary situation where we have about 50 days before the November election. And I don't think we've seen the last attempt on his life, sadly, because this is how far the left is going. They've continued to try to just get Trump. That's been their mantra since 2015. They've tried all kinds of ways, including personal attacks, financial bankruptcy, lawfare, the Mueller investigation, impeachments over and over. And now the only way literally to silence him is to try to take him out. And I have not seen from the left a complete condemnation of these assassination attempts in ways that would make me feel safe if I'm Donald Trump.
Well, let me add some numbers to this. And then Alex and Tony, you guys jump in here and whatever you want to ask of Jenna, please do so. But I noted a story yesterday. I'm not sure when this happened on The View. You know, that wonderful show, daytime show. It actually gets pretty good numbers in terms of viewership. But co-host Sonny Hostin was responding to a poll that was released in July. So this is a little bit behind the curve somewhat. But this is a poll that was, the results were released. University of Chicago via the Chicago Project on Security and Threats. And this survey, this poll, found that 10% of Americans support violence against Donald Trump. And now, Sonny Hostin, to her credit, she said this was despicable, that there was no, should be no support for violence against Trump. But I was stunned by the release of even 10%. May I know that's just 1/10, but the numbers were 26 million. People, I think, was the actual number. It was 26 million Americans believe the use of force is justified to keep Trump from regaining the presidency. Now, that's, to me, is stunning that you have that number of people, not who think in general terms, yeah, I think political violence is sometimes justified. No, they said violence was justified against Donald Trump. And I want your take on that, but also that would indicate that something the left is doing is driving people to that conclusion.
Of course, and this is the outcome of their worldview. I mean, they're already the party that doesn't believe in the inherent dignity and value of human life, and they are the ones that target their political adversaries, and they're the ones that tell all of their followers that human life doesn't matter and that you can persecute your political opponents. And so taking those two things together, it's the logical outcome that people would get from their rhetoric, then, okay, we're going to not value human life and take out our political opponents. I mean, this is the logical conclusion of what they're driving at. And this, it's so ironic that when Kamala Harris and the Democrats say that Trump is a threat to democracy, she's the one who didn't get a single vote or any sort of democratic process in her nomination. And, you know, this is also coming from the party that is trying to be in power in any way possible, where it's actually the conservatives and it's the Trump supporters that say, we want to make sure that there are no non-American citizens or illegal aliens that are voting in our elections. And it's the Democrats that oppose the SAVE Act that's being voted on today in Congress. And it's the conservatives and the Trump supporters that say, okay, you know, we want to make sure that we beat her at the ballot box, not any other way. I mean, and so we're actually the ones that want to protect and preserve the process in this country and have it legitimate, where the Democrats will use lawfare, they'll manipulate the Constitution and the system any way possible. So is it really that big of a surprise when some of these people are taking it just to the next level to try to continue to keep the Democrats in power? I mean, I don't think that this is a bridge that is that is inconsistent in their worldview for their followers to make. And that is a very dangerous conclusion.
Alex?
Jenna, hi, Alex McFarland here. It's a great honor to speak with you.
You too.
You know, could it not be argued legitimately that all of this rhetoric against Donald Trump and, you know, repeatedly calling him a threat, an existential threat, those that have engaged in such rhetoric and then unhinged people like Ryan Wesley Ruth and Matthew Crooks act on it, could it not be legitimately argued, Jenna, that this amounts to they are complicit and this is reckless endangerment by this language against him?
Well, I think in our sort of colloquial speak, yes. From a legal perspective, I don't yet at least see anything that would directly tie them to being personally responsible. I mean, you have to go back and see, you know, what Trump was impeached and then acquitted for in the second impeachment was this sort of incitement of violence, where clearly the left was trying to tie him to other people's actions, and some of those actions were criminal on January 6th of 2020. And so I think we need to be careful to go that direction legally, because unless there is a direct incitement and the law has a very clear definition of that, then we do allow for freedom of speech in this country. But in terms of recklessness in the political sphere and just wanting to ensure that there is never any sort of incitement, I do think the left needs to be careful. And so while we can term it that, I think just in a political sense, probably not yet in a legal sense. I haven't seen anything that I would say, okay, you know, somebody like Kamala Harris or a Democrat politician should be in trouble legally for their rhetoric, at least not yet. And hopefully we don't get to that point.
By the way, folks, Brent Creeley, our producer, is going to post. It is posted. It has posted the link to the article I mentioned that talks about 10% of people surveyed approve of violence specifically against Donald Trump. That's from a Fox News story. You can go scroll down and click on the actual link to the study itself if you want more of that information. Jenna, what do you got cooking for the rest of the week in terms of guests? If you've got that far and want to kind of tease what's coming up, what you got?
Well, the great Alex McFarland will be sitting in for me tomorrow morning, which will be great. So you can ask him on that. And then Friday, we have an entire show on the definition of Marxism and how Kamala Harris's policies actually are Marxist. So this is going to be a 1-hour deep dive. So many people on social media suggest that, you know, we're just using that term as a pejorative and as something, you know, that we can't really define. So we're going to take the entire hour and say, well, actually, we can define that and contrast that with the biblical worldview, the constitutional perspective, and really do a deep dive on Friday on that.
All right. Now, is that going to be, are you going to have guests on to discuss that, or you're perfectly capable of doing it yourself?
But a conversation's always better. And so, yes, Daryl Harrison, who is a very dear friend, and he is a pastor at Redeemer Bible Church in Gilbert, Arizona. That's what it is. He's a great biblical counselor and also the co-host of the Just Thinking podcast. Really excellent. They do deep dives on critical race theory, all kinds of stuff. He's going to be joining me for the hour.
Well, I will say this before we let you go. It is exciting to know that a pastor is capable of discussing an issue like this, because far too many pastors, I think, try to stay away from politics and understanding our Constitution and understanding the competing worldviews that are at war with the Constitution and the constitutional view. So it's exciting to know that there are pastors out there who can talk intelligently about this subject, and you're going to have one on your program on Friday. So,
and so true. So true. Yes, more
Alex.
More pastors need to be doing that, by the way. So sorry, Alex. Go ahead.
When I have the privilege of guest hosting the Jenna Ellis Show tomorrow, for one thing, I'm going to talk about Saul Bloom, who was the Democrat senator from New York State that wrote in 1925 the history of the U.S. Constitution, which Antonin Scalia called a classic in constitutional studies. So we're going to talk about the Constitution. But also, tomorrow live, I'll have an interview with Sheriff Richard Jones from Butler County, Ohio. And we'll get some firsthand on-the-ground report about the immigrants in Ohio.
Wow. All right. So are we going to get a final answer on the cats and the dogs? Or I'm just kidding. I don't even want to go there. But
maybe. But it's going to be a great show tomorrow, and I'm very honored to sit in.
I'm going to say both those shows sound fantastic, Alex and then Jenna. Of course, Alex will be hosting Jenna's show, so she gets partial credit for that tomorrow. And then Jenna's show on Friday morning sounds fantastic. Jenna, thank you so much for being on with us today. And look, thank you for all you do to defend the Constitution and a biblical worldview. We appreciate you being on AFR and all the other stuff you do beyond that. Thank you.
Thank you so much. I just love the AFR family. And thanks so much to Alex, who's always just fantastic sitting in. And I look forward to listening to it tomorrow morning. So thanks, guys, so much.
All right. Thanks, Jenna. All right, Fred, where to next?
Well, let's keep with the topic of language. Remember back a few months ago, Donald Trump started talking about an economic bloodbath?
Yes.
For the automotive industry, should President Biden win? All right. And what he's referring to there is that President Biden is going to put the auto workers out of business.
Right.
Because he wants everybody driving electric vehicles. So the context was that term bloodbath, an economic bloodbath. Well, what have the Democrats and their friends done, even in the media? They've turned that into, oh, he's going to go out and start killing
people. Kill people in the streets.
Going to kill people in the streets.
Exploding their pagers.
Well, in the last few days, since Sunday's second attempt at assassinating former President Trump, CNN had a roundtable to discuss just what we've been discussing here, the language being used by the left to misrepresent former President Trump's point of view and insinuating like, you know, he's a threat to democracy. Now they're saying the bloodbath term refers to actually hurting people if he gets elected. I mean, physically hurting people. So I want you to listen to this exchange. Scott Jennings, who is sitting on this panel, is CNN's senior political commentator. He is taking his own network and those people who work for that network to task for misrepresenting. And it happened during the debate, too.
Yes.
Totally. And, of course, the ABC moderators, did they call Kamala Harris on the mat for that? Of course not. No. So have a listen to this exchange in this CNN roundtable about the misuse and abuse of language and taking language out of context. Cut number 14.
It is said by every Democrat working for or around her campaign every day on this network and every other one. The bloodbath thing is stated every single day.
Okay, let me.
But my point is, dictator, bloodbath, eliminate constitution.
Hold on.
What do you think that does?
Just to clear this up, you're referring to Trump's use of the word bloodbath when he was talking.
And what was he talking about?
I'm going to explain it to people because I think there's confusion about this. Use of the word bloodbath when he was talking about, vehicle manufacturing jobs in the United States. Vice President Harris improperly and unfairly mischaracterized that as him saying there would be a bloodbath if he were elected. However, she did not say that if Trump were elected, there would be a bloodbath. She did not say
I know you have interviewed and had people out here and have watched the same coverage I have. The bloodbath garbage is a pillar of the Democratic campaign against Trump, as is dictator, as is eliminate the U.S. Constitution.
You know, Tony, that explanation of what Kamala Harris said and the defense of what Democrats have been saying, this wasn't a mistake.
Oh.
This is not a mistake. Just like the Charlottesville garbage is not a mistake. They are knowingly lying because they are continuing to demonize Donald Trump. And the word bloodbath, if you don't understand the context, sounds like a threat of violence against people with whom the former president disagrees. Kamala Harris, that wasn't a mistake. I don't think it was a mistake that the ABC moderators didn't correct her on that. This is part of the playbook.
No, I just want to say good for Scott Jennings on holding these people's feet to the fire and making them give an account for what they've been saying. It's folks, these people talk outside both, talk on both sides of their mouth, talk outside both sides of their mouth. They want to misrepresent. They're always mischaracterizing and misrepresenting and lying about the context and the words and the verbiage that Donald Trump is using, while at the same time explicitly saying what they're going to do, which is far more dangerous, and saying that they're not, that's not what they said. So you have a complete reversal and just memory holing of everything that Kamala Harris has said prior to being made the nominee for the Democratic Party. You've had just complete memory holing of everything she actually said, while at the same time, as an example of the in the ABC debate, misrepresenting everything that Donald Trump says. So Kamala Harris didn't say she wanted to ban fracking. Well, she said it, but that's not what she meant, right? And so there's this, the media is more than happy to jump over themselves to, you know, rephrase what Kamala Harris was saying. And I think what she was saying was, you know, that she's kind of changed her opinion on fracking, or she's kind of softened up on the Second Amendment. You know, she doesn't really want to just confiscate your guns, or, you know, she doesn't really want price controls. They will fall over themselves to correct and pull back what the Democratic Party says, while it's simultaneously pushing the same narrative and the same lies over and over and over again that have been debunked and have been, since numerous times over, have been corrected. And good for, just good for Scott Jennings on calling him to the mat on that.
I'm actually surprised, Alex, that Scott Jennings is still at CNN. The fact that he is funny a lot of times, I think, kind of helps him keep his seat. But Tony makes a good point. Kamala Harris has reversed and flipped on almost all her major positions.
Yeah.
That is being explained away, memory hold, you know, putting a good spin on what she has clearly said. She said she was for mandatory gun buybacks. All right. Yeah. So Tim Walz said, as Fred mentioned earlier, that misinformation is not protected by the First Amendment. What does that mean? Okay, yeah. We all know what that means. So on the one hand, the terrible things the Democrats have said have been spun in a positive way or completely denied or memory-holed. Meanwhile, they are twisting what Donald Trump has said to put the worst possible spin on it.
You know, it's been said that the future belongs to those who communicate well. All right. Let me say this. Doonesbury, I was no big fan of Doonesbury, Gary Trudeau, but when Clinton was in office, Gary Trudeau did a series of comics where there was a floating waffle that represented Bill Clinton, and they called him the Waffle in Chief. Do you guys remember that?
I still have a couple of Doonesbury books, and knowing that he was kind of leftist, but such a funny guy. So
such a funny guy. Now let me. I'm showing my age here, but here's the thing: the left will twist, distort, spin language. The bloodbath thing, you know, an economic bloodbath. Maybe that was a little bit over the top choice of word, but we know. Oh my goodness! Everybody knows he doesn't mean, you know, if EVs are mandated, we should go out, you know, killing, vandalizing. I mean, that would be BLM. But right. Here's the thing. In 1906, Ambrose Bierce wrote something called the Devil's Dictionary. And he would give the word like faith. Ambrose Bierce said faith is blindly believing something without evidence. Marriage, it's a slavery arrangement with a master and a mistress. I mean, but and in a way, it was viewed as satire, but whether it be the Screwtape Letters with C.S. Lewis in the 40s or the Devil's Dictionary with Ambrose Bierce, this, and I'm using my words carefully, this absolute bastardization of language, this absolute raping of the meaning of words, that is straight out of the left's playbook. Now, only in the mind of a leftist would killing a baby be health care.
Right, exactly. Good. Right.
And so, folks, I guess I'm saying you have to really use your imagination, but really be diligent and, frankly, prayerful to parse out what is being said by what is truly being meant.
You know, and this is a biblical thing. I'm reading a lot in the in the prophets. I love the Old Testament prophets, yeah. And just have been just reading through some of them. And it's not like light reading, but yeah. They talk a lot about liars.
They talk in Isaiah chapter 5, Isaiah says, "Woe to those who call good evil and evil good."
Yeah.
But that's the climate where we find ourselves, I believe.
And you know what? Christians ought to be willing to call out Republicans or conservatives right. if they lie. Okay, and so that, you know, part of that is it's an important part of the Christian responsibility to hold elected officials accountable. But I have to say, I think I'm being fair on this. The left has brought lying to a whole new level. Mm-hmm. When it comes to the political discourse. So,
yeah. Well, there was a book in the 90s called The Liar's Tale, A History of Falsehood by an author named Jeremy Campbell. And it was written during the Clinton years. And he said Bill Clinton has raised lying to an art form. Now, it's really important that we be persons of truth and we tell the truth. But look, we're sending people to Washington that call a spending increase a budget cut.
Yes. No, that's absolutely true. That's because
right. It's true, isn't it?
Republicans would say we want to lower the increase. So it's not going to be a 3% increase in spending. It's going to be a 2% increase. Or a 0.5% increase, and Democrats turn around and say it's a spending cut. And
let us not forget the Inflation Reduction
Act.
Yeah,
that's a go-to. Yeah.
Joe Biden said the other day, that really wasn't the right name for
that. We should have named it what it was.
Look, I may or may not have been looking up Doonesbury floating Clinton waffle cartoon just to see what it was. Sorry, I was absolutely rolling, having to mute my mic.
That Doonesbury was funny. The guy was clearly a leftist, but my goodness, a good comedian or a good cartoonist will skewer everyone who deserves skewering. So, all right, folks, we're going to take a 5-minute break for news, and when we come back, more here on Today's Issues. You're listening to the American Family Radio Network. We hope you'll join us.
The views and opinions expressed in this broadcast may not necessarily reflect those of the American Family Association or American Family Radio.